Shango, Mojuba.
People use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary. dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
If man is the father, the sun is the center of the earth, in the middle of the universe, then why is this verse coming six times rehearsed? Don't freestyle much, but I write them like such.
Word.
Amongst the fiends controlled by the screens, what does it all mean, all this I'm seeing? Human beings screaming vocal javelins, sign of a local unraveling.
Uh-huh.
My wandering got my wondering, where Christ is in all this crisis. Hating Satan never knew what nice is. Check the papers, well, I bet on ISIS. More than your eye can see and ears can hear. Year by year, all the sense disappears. Nonsense perseveres, prayers lives with fear. Beware, two triple O's.
It might feel good, it might sound a little something, but damn the game if it don't mean nothing. What is game? Who got game? Where's the game in life? Behind the game, I got game, she got game, we got game, they got game, he got game. It might feel good, it might sound a little something, but the game if it ain't saying nothing.
Damn, was it something I said? Pretend you don't see, so you turn your head. Race scared of his shadow, does it matter? Thought of reparations, got a plan with the population. Nothing to lose, everything's approved. People use, even murder's excused. White men in suits don't have to jump. Still 1,001 ways to lose with the shoes. God takes care of old folks and fools, while the devil takes care of making all the rules. Folks don't even own themselves, paying mental rent, the corporate presidents. One out of 1 million residents, be a dissident who ain't kissing it. The politics are chains and whips, got the sick missing chips and all the championships. What's love got to do with what you got? Don't let a win get to your head or a loss to your heart.
What?
Nonsense perseveres, prayers lives with fear. Beware, two triple O is
it might there. Feel good, it might sound a little something, but damn the game if it don't mean nothing. What is game? Who got game? Where's the game in life? Behind the game, I got game, she got game, we got game, they got game, he got game. It might feel good, it might sound a little something, but the game if it ain't saying nothing.
Something happening, yeah. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there.
Yeah, that's right.
Telling me I got to beware. It's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
That millennium just be killing them. That's scary, like lies buried in a library. When did a state pen correct anything? When piles of us still be catching the bus. When stacks of cats packing laundry mats. Pay the preachers back, but where the teachers at? I ain't even gotta ask it. And who's underpaid that got fouled at the basket? I can't blame the envy at who be getting all the Benjis and taking them grants for granted. Last I checked, pyramids wasn't built like projects or in them government checks. Modern day thugs ain't got no guts. Pardon the expression under governor nuts. Last time in the church be the last time in the church. Dead pledged allegiance to CDs and movies. Leaving reality, believing fantasy. Bleeding fatalities, too many formalities. Prayers laced with fear, beware. 2000 is here.
It might feel good, it might sound a little something, but damn the game if it don't mean nothing. What is game? Who got game? Where's the game in life? Behind the game, I got game, she got game, we got game, they got game, he got game. It might feel good, it might sound a little something, but the game if it ain't saying nothing.
Hotep, my brothers and sisters, welcome to the Black Reality Think Tank. I am your host, William Rogers. We are here every Tuesday night from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. I am super excited about our program this evening. We have a wonderful group of conversationalists that are going to talk about some very critical things, and I am just excited to bring them on. I also have a wonderful co-host that's going to be assisting me with this production tonight. One of the reasons that is so exciting is that we have a cross generation of individuals that are going to talk. And very rarely sometimes do we all come together. So I've got the Generation X, the Millennials, the Baby Boomers, and I've got some of the silent, what they call the silent group, that are going to be here tonight and talk about something that is very, very important and very dynamic for our future. The Black Reality Think Tank, as I said, comes on every Tuesday night. We are a historical research-based organization. We present discussions and topics that relate to the African world, and we talk about things that will obviously make changes in our community. The ultimate result is changes, and that's what we are looking to do. And so sometimes we have to explore these ideas, explore these issues, and keep talking about that history, that history, that history, that history. We never can talk enough, as our great ancestor John Henry Clark repeated earlier in the beginning quote of our opening of our program. History is a clock. And so we very well want to use and access that today. So I'm not going to do a lot of talking today because I want to get right into this topic. One of the features, though, that I cannot overlook that I always have to do in terms of the Black Reality Think Tank is we do what we call an ancestral profile. We do like to profile our ancestors. We have called the African gods to the table today. We call Shango to come and be with us. And we also want to talk to our ancestors and call them and speak their name into the universe because, you know, we stand on the shoulders of greatness. And so we never, ever want to overlook them. As the great Fannie Lou Hamer said, we must always praise the bridges that brought us over. Today I want to focus in on a not necessarily an individual, but on a group, a very powerful group in our history that we must not forget, and we need to talk about them because it's still relevant today. We need this kind of group with us today. But it is generated by a young lady whose name was Henrietta Vinton Davis. Henrietta Vinton Davis. In 1920, Henrietta Vinton Davis establishes what was called the Black Cross Nurses. The Black Cross Nurses in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, as an auxiliary of the Universal Negro Improvement Association and African Communities League, which was founded by the great Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey. The Black Cross Nurses served as the women's auxiliary of the UNIA, the United Negro Improvement Association, placing women in a supportive role, while the men's auxiliary served in a protective role. The great Marcus Garvey wanted everyone in the UNIA movement to feel they belonged within the organization, and so therefore the Black Cross Nurses served that purpose for women. The Black Cross Nurses was based on the World War I nursing model of the Red Cross. Local chapters were established within a matron, a head nurse, a secretary, and treasurer to provide health services and hygiene education to Black members of the community. Few programs existed in the 1920s at that time which would admit people of African descent into nursing training at the time, and many health facilities provided unequal care to Black patrons. One of the goals of the organization was addressing these discrepancies. Doctors and nurses and lay practitioners took courses ranging from 6 months to a year to make sure that standardized care was being given. In addition, upon graduation from the course, each member was required to purchase and wear their official uniform. In many ways, the organization functioned as a social reform movement while developing role models for young women. It promoted education, good health and hygiene, juvenile rehabilitation, maternal and infant care, and training in proper nutrition. It also provided a professional, organized structure for its members, giving them a means to appear in roles of public leadership. Many of their articles were written in the Negro World by members of the Black Cross Nurses. They wrote a variety of articles, from advice to expectant mothers to things about contagious diseases, heart disease, and hygiene, as well as descriptions of the conditions, the symptoms, and the treatment options. Benevolent community service included disturbing factors about health care. Syphilis was on the rise in the 1920s. Child mortality rate was extremely high. So a lot of their efforts were designed around providing proper information so that mothers and families could take care of their children. Their benevolent community service included distributing clothes and food to those in need. The requirements of the membership were that the women be active members of UNIA between the ages of 15 and 45 years old. They had to be of Negro blood and African descent. Nurses were also required to be able to read and write in order to promote literacy in their community and serve as examples to others. An overriding goal, the organization used social health, concerns to uplift the Black race from degeneracy, and believing that by creating a sanitary living environment, the community would prosper. Units quickly formed in other cities across the United States, as well as in the Caribbean and Central America. In the early 1920s, the United States UNIA organization spread into 38 states, and membership in the Black Cross Nurses was in the tens of thousands. The largest branch in the world was located in Harlem, New York. Within a few years of the formal organization of the Black Cross Nurses, there were chapters in Alabama, Chicago, California, Georgia, Louisiana, New Jersey, New York, and Virginia, with international chapters in Belize, Nova Scotia, Canada, Panama, Trinidad, and Tobago. By 1927, membership had declined, but the Black Cross Nurses provided education for African-American nurses and healthcare access to African-Americans in their communities through the 1960s. Henry Etta Vinton Davis, along with Marcus Mosiah Garvey, organizing the Black Cross Nurses. We need the Black Cross Nurses in 2018. There is a website that is now in process of organizing a new chapter of the Black Cross Nurses today. And I'll give you that website. It is www.c, as in cat, b as in boy, p as in Paul, m as in Mary, .org/Black Cross Nurses. So take a look at that website. They are reorganizing very dynamic ancestors who have done a lot for our people. Thank you. So with that, we are now ready to launch into our discussion for today. I have a wonderful co-host that I'm extremely excited about, and I'm going to now introduce her. She is a very strong community activist. She is from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, formerly lived in Dallas, Texas. Dynamic young lady, has done a lot in our community, but I want to just introduce her because she is the one that formed a lot of the voices that we're going to hear from today as we talk about this dynamic subject matter with Kanye West. So I'm going to introduce her, but first, before I bring her on, I would like to play this clip for you, which is really the basis of the program tonight. And at that point, we can then launch right into her discussion and her introduction. Let's listen to this clip real quickly.
I don't think people necessarily understand what happened last week with the Great Make America Great Again hat. What are you trying to do with the message you're sending?
Well, it was really just my subconscious. It was a feeling I had. You know, like, people were taught how to think. We're taught how to feel. We don't know how to think for ourselves. We don't know how to feel for ourselves. People say feel free, but they don't really want us to feel free. And I felt a freedom in, first of all, just doing something that everybody tells you not to do. I just love Trump. That's my boy. Like, you know, it's like so many rappers. You look at a video of Snoop Dogg loving Trump, but then he get in the office and now they don't love him. Like, Trump is one of rap's favorite people,
no,
right?
But we talk about yeah. this, that before he was yeah. elected president, people yeah. in hip-hop, they it was an in thing to put Donald Trump yeah. in your rhyme somewhere.
Yeah. And by the way, right. I am in hip-hop, but I'm not just in hip-hop. I'm a black person in a black community, but I'm not just that. I feel like one thing is people try to minimize me to artists, hip-hop, black community. Yeah, I'm always going to represent that, but I also represent the world. When you hear about slavery for 400 years, for 400 years, that sounds like a choice. Like, you was there for 400 years and it's all of y'all? You know, like, it's like we're mentally in prison. I like the word prison because slavery goes too direct to the idea of blacks. It's like slavery, Holocaust Jews, slavery is blacks. So prison is something that unites us as one race, blacks and whites being one race, that we're one, we're the human race. Do you feel that I'm feeling, do you feel that I'm being free and I'm thinking free?
I actually don't think you're thinking anything. I think what you're doing right now is actually the absence of thought. And the reason why I feel like that
is because Kanye, you're entitled to your opinion. You're entitled to believe whatever you want. But there is fact and real world, real life consequence behind everything that you just said. And while you are making music and being an artist and living the life that you've earned by being a genius, the rest of us in society have to deal with these threats to our lives. We have to deal with the marginalization that has come from the 400 years of slavery that you said for our people was a choice. Frankly, I'm disappointed, I'm appalled, and brother, I am unbelievably hurt by the fact that you have morphed into something, to me, that's not real. Bro, you gotta be responsible, man.
Bro, I'm sorry
you
I hurt you.
You gotta be responsible. No.
I'm sorry
nah,
I hurt
man,
you, bro.
Bro, your voice is too big. You got.
Good afternoon, Ms. Brooks. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Dr. Rogers. I do have one correction towards your introduction. I am from Chicago. I currently live in Milwaukee,
okay,
but I
right.
claim my Chicago roots. So,
all right.
I wanted
straighten
to make
that out.
That
That's
clear.
Good. Can't leave out Chi-Town, can you? Okay. All right. You need to go to Chi-Town and do some work, too. That's some work that needs to be done up there with our brothers and sisters, but that's another discussion. Okay, Ms. Brooks, what's going on? What's the problem with my brother, Kanye West? Or does he have a problem?
I don't think that he has a problem. I definitely think the way we perceive his message is the problem. You know, it's the system of slavery may not have been a choice for the people or whatever, but the act to be mentally enslaved, to submit, is a choice. And I think that that was taken out of context. People were so focused on the fact that they felt like he disrespected our ancestors. And the delivery, I do agree, was way off. He was very insensitive with his delivery. And I feel like his approach could have been altered for people to be able to receive it. But is that a problem with us that we can't receive the message in the raw, or is that a problem with him? You know, and that's my perspective on it. You know, I definitely think that what he said was very true, because when you take that fact that we had a choice, and what is the alternative to slavery? The alternative to slavery was death. And death is a choice. People go overseas and they fight other people's wars, and that's a choice. They choose to liberate other people, and they choose to possibly die, put their lives on the line. You know, why can't we have that same freedom and that same choice here to liberate ourselves?
So basically then, and I know you have assembled a panel of individuals that are going to talk about it.
Oh, definitely.
Right, and I know I want mm-hmm. you to introduce those. But let me just make sure we kind of straighten the basic notion here. So when you say we have a choice to choose slavery, so when the slave ships of the Portuguese and the Spanish and the Dutch mm-hmm. and the French and the English landed on the coast of West Africa, people could walk up to the ships and say, are you going over there in America? You want me to be a slave? No, I don't want to do that. Or, yeah,
no.
I want to do that. You're saying that they had a choice
no.
to do that?
And people make it so simple, and they make jokes about the system.
I'm not joking.
Now, the system was horrific. The system was, it's unimaginable what our ancestors had to endure to preserve life for them to, you know, bring us here. You know, I don't downplay it. I don't think that, you know, I just believe in a higher God. You know, I believe in a spirit. Like, I believe that God, if everybody would have chose death over slavery, I feel like we still would have existed. I don't think that nobody has the right or nobody has the power to make us extinct. You know, I don't think that I don't think that that would have been possible. I feel like we had slave revolts and people chose to lose their lives or lay down their lives to, you know, challenge the system of slavery. You know, I think that we're talking about two different types of slavery. We're talking about, you know, the slavery of the mind that makes you submit and makes you do the work. And we're talking about the system of slavery. No, it wasn't a choice for people or whatever to come over. They were taken out of their will, you know, over here. But for them to actually do the work and for it to last for 400 years, when there were people who were challenging the system, you know, there were a lot of people who were supporting them, the system, and a lot of people looked like us. And I think that's what Kanye West was trying to, I guess, explain. You know, when he says that he doesn't want to talk about or use that word slavery, he calls it mentally imprisoned. You know, for you to be mentally imprisoned, you know, you're restricted by fear. You're restricted by your actions. You're not moving. You're not doing things or whatever. And I think that that's a choice, because we still have people who are still dealing with that same issue, who need to emancipate their minds from mental slavery. We still have that issue still today in 2018.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna let you introduce your guests, and then we want them to talk about it.
Oh,
We'll come back. We'll come back and talk again. Why don't you, who do you want to call first? So everybody is on their mics. Oh. Their mics are live, mm-hmm. So you can choose who you
want. Yeah, I'm going to call my sister, you know, Allegra, on first. You know, this sister is deep. She's a graduate from Marquette University.
Okay.
She's active in the community, and she's very opinionated. I mean, I shared my viewpoint on this situation with her, and she immediately disagreed. You know, this sister is, you know, very strong. She's, you know, she has a great social media platform, and she uses it to fight white supremacy on a daily basis.
Okay.
This sister is a part of a lot of different organizations, such as Be the Change Milwaukee. And, you know, I would love her to share her viewpoint, her perspective on the issue,
okay.
You know, and also, you know, tell us why you feel the way that you do about Kanye West's comments about slavery.
Okay.
And, you know, highlight why do you feel it's important for us to care about this situation?
Well, you are my co-host, so you can welcome her to the program and let her say her part.
So I want to welcome Allegra Denise. Allegra, are you still on the phone?
I'm here.
Okay. You know, I know you're going to disagree with me, so I'm I'm giving you the floor.
I got to disagree with you.
I know.
It's so problematic, but thank you for having me with my differing opinion. You know, I think that, first and foremost, incredibly disrespectful to our ancestors. I think when we look at whether or not we could have even survived, when I look at the state that Black people are in today and some of the people who are speaking up saying, Kanye's right. And it's like, okay, you're basically saying that you agree with him that slavery shouldn't have lasted that long. Tell me what you would have done. And these are the same people that go to jobs that they hate every single day, complain about it, and that's your job. So, you know, when Black Twitter did the whole, you know, parody on you going to slavery today, nah, I'm good, I'm not going. It's the same kind of concept of working a job you hate, except that was you were forced, you were raped, you were beaten. And so when I look at the injustice that we deal with, when I look at Black Lives Matter, when I look at how we have the world at our fingertips, where I can put up a status and reach 4,000 people right now with my thoughts and opinions, and yet we're still not in a place of being unified. And so for that reason, it's interesting to me that we would criticize our ancestors who lacked the resources and technology that we currently have. And yet some of us are walking around saying, oh, yeah, they shouldn't have been enslaved. On the flip side of that, you have someone literally, first of all, I do believe that he is mentally ill. I believe that I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a psychologist. I do believe he's bipolar. And that's just from dealing with other people that I know that are mentally ill that struggle with bipolar. I do believe that he is. And he has stated, you know, that he sees a therapist or has seen a therapist in the past for different reasons. And not to say that to see a therapist, you have to have a diagnosed mental illness. That's not what I'm saying. However, I believe that he has some definite issues. And I think that's very evident. And that does not take away from his intelligence. Often people who struggle with mental illness are highly, highly intelligent, off the charts when it comes to IQ tests. So he's very smart. With that being said, why does Kanye need everyone to explain what he meant? Kanye has been saying what he said and what he meant for a long time. He's made millions and millions of dollars off of saying what he means. Now all of a sudden it's, well, he didn't mean it like that, or he didn't mean to say it that way. No, I think he did. And it's interesting to me that a person who's sitting up here with a Make America Great hat on, and the basis of that platform is racism. In order to allegedly make America great, whenever it was great, I'm not sure. Someone's going to have to enlighten me on that. But in order to do that, they're basically wanting to extinguish Black people. Their whole platform is racism. And so for him to do that and be in his position is very dangerous. And so that's why I think I took so much offense to it. And it's like, you know, when I think back to old Kanye, and when he get on, he leave you for a white girl. And that's exactly what he did. And so it's just so interesting to me that he stereotypes himself and then followed that path. And he could have just as easily said that the Holocaust was, you know, that was a choice. And like, not to split hairs, but when you go back and examine how the Holocaust began, if you read the diary of Anne Frank and you look at what their society looked like and how it transformed and how they followed along with it, it was very different and less violent initially than slavery. And so it almost seemed very choice-like, if we want to be dangerous with our words. So why did he not choose that? Because Jewish people run this country, because they run the music industry, because Kanye, just like he admitted he was on opioids, he would have had a quote-unquote overdose, and he would have been done. But it's easy to attack Black people. It's easy to attack our ancestors because we're not united. And then that's true proof because you've got Black men supporting Trump now. What, do you have a 20% increase? That, to me, says that we're not united. And it's constantly, you know, I mean, it's Black people in general, but specifically I think it's dangerous when Black men want to follow behind someone who's clearly sick. He's clearly mentally ill. And I don't see the value in anything that he's saying. I don't see the value in what he's pushing. I don't see how it's making Black America better or great. And, you know, I just think it's really, I just think it's really disrespectful. So that's pretty much my take on things. I'll let somebody else talk.
Okay, Ms. Brooks, you can want to call on someone else that you...
Oh, definitely. I want the ladies to go first, you know, with the conversation. I am going to call on one of my sisters that I just recently met.
Okay.
I've read a post of hers, and she was expounding on this issue, I want to say, yesterday. And I just felt like, you know, hey, this sister needs to, you know, be brought on this platform. We call her Jessica Peace, or J. Peace. You know, she's an independent contractor. She works in the Milwaukee community as, you know, an activist. She's an advocate. She's a UW-Madison alumni. You know, she's a mentor. This sister just has, you know, her head together. She has a lot of different things going on for her. So, Jessica, are you still on the phone?
Yes, she is there. Miss Perry, let me make sure she has her
Yes, I'm still, I'm here. I'm here.
Okay.
Good evening, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Greetings, sister. And thank you for joining the call. We would like you to share your viewpoint, your perspective on what Kanye said, and also why do you feel this way, and why should we care about, you know, his words, or how does it impact our community?
Okay, awesome. So my perspective on what Kanye had said in regards to slavery being a choice, in regards to our ancestors making that choice to be enslaved, I would have to say I agree with Kanye West. However, there are things that I disagree with him about, which I like to touch on those when he said, when he kind of spilled into talking about how we should love everyone and accept everyone and be this one love type of melting pot world. When we know that, as far as my perspective goes, and what the reality is, that is not actually the best for us to do, or haven't been in the past and beneficial. So in regards to our ancestors, kind of like I would say, and not to offend anyone, but say they kind of walked themselves into that situation because they wanted to be accepting and loving of everyone that was outside of them and their culture and their race. It's like allowing a predator to come and sit at the table with you because they smile and grin in your face or say nice things and maybe potentially bring you gifts and things like that, but all along they're holding a knife behind their back waiting to stab you. But you allowed them to come sit at the table and eat with you. And so our ancestors, we have to give them a lot of credit, knowing that they were, one, way more, probably, I have to say that they were probably way more in tune than we are now in regards to our connection to our Creator, the Lord Most High. And so with them being more in tune and having that authentic, direct connection than we do now without all of the distractions that we now experience, whether that's living in this Western European system and world, as far as the media goes, the music, the schools, the different program systems, like they didn't have all that things going on. They lived amongst themselves, by themselves, and for themselves. And so I know that they had really good communication with the Creator, that if you go by what most people consider like the Holy Bible or ancient scriptures and textures and things like that, which I don't, but I have read them for intellectual purposes. And at one point I was raised Christian Baptist, which I don't practice any religion anymore. But they were given specific instructions as a chosen people to live their life in a particular way. And so I would have to say, when they stepped outside of the instructions that they were given from our divine Creator on how to live their lives and what to and things to watch out for and to steer clear of the same people that they welcomed into their societies and different communities, they didn't listen. So they suffered at the hand of what, you know, some people call the beast, and what we now see today as the so-called ruling class or the elite of the world. And so to not follow instruction is why I feel that they had ended up in the situation they ended up in, because our ancestors, one, wasn't taken by force until after you have this group of people studying you that you willingly let into your society. And now they know how you move, they know how you operate, they know how you communicate, they know all these things about you, they know how you are soulfully connected, and some people say spiritually connected. And so they learned the ways of our ancestors and the people so they could easily manipulate them in their, mainly their mental capacity, and be able to conquer them. And I just like to touch on, we're such in a uproar about this whole black and white thing. One thing, being an intellectual person that actually thinks, we have to think about, is there a agenda behind what is being portrayed or put out in this mainstream media? I don't actually get any news and take it seriously from the mainstream media, because I know that it's always an agenda behind it, especially when something is being catered towards the general masses of people and the so-called black people. And I say so-called black people because we have to also do away with calling ourselves black. We're not black. That's also another agenda and a code word to be systematically placed on the so-called black people, which we're bronze, copper people, carbon-based people. We're not black. Black is an actual color. Like, you can compare something that's actually black to our skin, and it doesn't match up. So it doesn't make sense to even keep calling ourselves that, let alone get very angry about that term that's being used on us in a degenerate and degrading way anyway. And so you have Kanye West here saying this whole black and white thing. I see that as an agenda to either push the people into, it's another manipulation, to push the masses of people into either being angry mm-hmm. or being fearful. Fearful in the way of, like, wow, you have this man who is so-called black that has a lot of influence on a mass population of people. Is he going to take us in one direction, or is he going to take us in another direction? Like, those are, you know, like, hypothetical questions you could just ask yourself. And what direction is his agenda taking us? And who has put him up to this? Because we know that all the mainstream media and airways are not ran by us, copper people, carbon-based people. It's not ran by us. We know that they're ran by Jews, and they for not one second will not air anything that they don't intend to have a direct effect on the masses of people, whether it's to manipulate your mind to kind of get you to think in a certain way, or whether it's to get you to be emotional about something, because that also has been our problem as a collective people, that we allow them to play on our emotions, which we shouldn't be emotional about things. Like Kanye West, he said what he said, but why would we be emotional about it? Mm-hmm. I like to agree with Sister Brooks when she said that he may have could have said it more tactfully, or in a better way, that it could have been better received. But logically and rationally, what he's saying is, I feel that it's correct. And there's no need to be emotional about it, because when we're dealing with our emotions in regards to being free thinkers, you can't think with emotions. They're two different things. You're not using your mental capacity to override your emotions. Your emotions are actually overriding, like, what your thought process should actually be. And as a group of people, we haven't actually collectively learned how to actually think for ourselves. We've been programmed to think and feel particular ways by what's put in the media for us, or what's put, you know, just in these different programs that we kind of all live our lives by on this, I call it a social plantation as of right now. And so you have a group of people who are upset about what this guy has said. But then it also goes back to no real community. We don't have a real community that would allow us to have any, like, standing against, or not even, it's not about being against or for anything. Because Kanye has the right to say he's for Trump, and I can believe that he's probably for Trump because of the you know, the financial aspect of it. He looks up to him because of his business ventures and things like that. And that's more the reason why he probably looks up to Trump and glorifies him in that way. And so knowing this, people that necessarily look like you, as far as having, like, copper skin, bronze skin, doesn't mean they are you, or they actually come from you, because everybody is not African. Everybody is not so-called black. These are all terms that have been placed in society on people to categorize us in these little boxes and to have you acting out these things that says you are African or you are so-called black or you are so-called white. They're not white either, because you compare a piece of white paper to their pale pinkish skin, it's not white. So you have to like logically think about all these different things. What is the agenda behind all of these terms, and why does it get so many people in a uproar about these terms or about these conditions that we, you know, place or that we have allowed to be placed on us as a people? And now in 2018, we're still talking about the same issues, but it has to be agenda behind it. Like, wow, it's like somebody, you have this agenda going and you have a trap, and they've set up a trap, and you, and the people are walking right into the trap while they're over here doing something else, like building more prisons for you, or actually leaving this planet to go to Mars because of the atmosphere changing, where they can no longer really survive in such atmosphere. So they're just doing things to keep our people distracted from actually having a real connection to our descendants and ascendants, and actually having coming together in a collective community. Okay. It's not by any chance that this thing has blown up. And I always constantly see this, like, in the mainstream media. You'll have a situation come out, and they'll blow it up, and then you'll have people ranting and raving about it for maybe weeks, months on end, and then it dies out, and it's quiet again. And then something else happens, and then something else happens. It's not by any chance, because you have things going on all the time in our small pockets of communities that never gets aired or showcased because it's not really of any importance. So you have to know that there's an agenda behind what is being, you know, what is being given to you, and people actually receiving that.
That's interesting.
Just like going back to the agenda with our ancestors, and them kind of like stepping outside of what was given to them to do and strictly adhere to. If anyone follows anything of the Bible, we are living in Revelations right now. And if you follow that and you can read the plot, you will see exactly where we are as a group of people in comparison to every other race of beings that are on the earth. We can see that because of the disobedience, we have, you know, ended up in a place that if you make a choice, then you also make the choice to suffer the consequence, whether that be a consequence that's in your best interest or a consequence that's not in your best interest. Either way it goes, there's going to be some type of action behind the things that you put out. That's just the natural laws of the universe that we live in the world that we live in.
Ms. Perry, I need to, I really appreciate that. Your remarks are powerful, and we want to come back to that. We want to come back to you. I've got a switchboard full of folk that may want to say something.
Okay, sure thing.
Right. Ms. Brooks, you. I want to, there's a young lady that's on who is 17 years of age, and she's a high school student, and she has some thoughts. She actually runs an organization of young women called Girls in Action, and I want her to kind of chide in on this conversation a little bit. She's a university school student in Wisconsin. But before I do that, I just want to real quickly say you are listening to the Black Reality Think Tank. We are here every Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. We are broadcasting on the Time for an Awakening network. This is a part of blacktalkradionetwork.com. The Black Reality Think Tank is a creation of the Sankofa Historical Society. As well, this program is being sponsored by Motherland Media Network. I'm going to talk a little bit more about some of the other programs that are airing on this network. I want you to just let our audience know what else we've got going here. But this is a part of what is called timeforanawakening.com, timeforanawakening.com, which is also a part of blacktalkradionetwork.com. And if you have an opportunity, go to the website, www.timeforanawakening.com. All of our programs are there. These programs are archived. This program will be on that website. You can listen to it again anytime, 24/7, 7 days a week. Or either you can go to blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. .com as well. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about the other programs that are on. But Ms. Brooks, let me introduce to you Ms. Erica Lofton. As I said, she's a high school student, and I did ask her to come on and provide that Generation X perspective in terms of this whole Kanye West. Ms. Lofton, are you there?
Yes, I am, but I can't stay long because, like you said, I'm a high school student and I got homework.
All right. Well, we don't want to stop you from doing your homework. Okay, real quickly, can you hone in a little bit about the Kanye West situation from your perspective?
Yes, for sure. So initially, when I heard what he said, of course, I want to be like, what? You sound crazy. Slavery wasn't a choice. But then after further discussion with some of my colleagues and listening to other people's point of view, I got into the mindset of saying, well, he doesn't mean that slavery, the act of slavery being a choice. He means the mindset that we're in is a choice. You can look back. You can go look at, for example, Harriet Tubman. She has a saying that says, I freed thousands of slaves, and I could have freed thousands of more if they only knew they were slaves. So just her example and just that saying is just showing that you can have the mindset to either run away, or you can have the mindset of staying a slave and doing the labor and being in that oppressive mindset. Another example, Nat Turner, they came up with a movie a couple years ago called Birth of a Nation that showed his story. He started a revolt, a slavery revolt, where he killed the masters and decided to do that. So he had that choice, and the people, his followers, had the choice to do what they did. So the act of bondage wasn't a choice. It was a law. It was in the Constitution. That wasn't a choice. But the act to go against that law or to run away or to stay, that is your choice. And it's an extreme choice, I may say, death or slavery. It's an extreme choice, but it is your own choice. So that's pretty much all I have to say about that.
Okay. All right. What are some of the things your organization is doing real quickly? Anything you want to tell us about what's going on with your group? Yeah, Girls in Action, correct?
Yes. It's a foundation. And what we do is we create grants. We give grants to girls who have projects that align with our mission. Our mission is teamwork to promote manners, self-esteem, social and communication skills, and having fun. And so the age range is from 8 to 12, and so our main goal is just to create youth leaders, youth girl leaders. And so, yeah, you can follow us on Facebook. It's Girls in Action, Inc. We have a Twitter. It's Girls in Action, Inc. as well. And we also have a website, which is www.girlswithazinaction.com.
Okay. And you're getting ready to take some young ladies to Africa, aren't you?
Yeah, I am taking. My mom is actually going to Africa. She has a GoFundMe. Her and her sister, they're going to Africa. They're going to Ghana on a mission trip with their church. And you can look up on GoFundMe, Sister Mission Trip to Ghana, and you can donate some money so they can go.
Okay.
So you can set up on GoFundMe.
All right. Well, I just wanted to give you a chance to give all your stuff a little plug. I know that you are very active in the community and doing a lot of great things. So anyway, go do your homework, and thank you so much. I really appreciate your comments. Okay?
Okay. Thank
nice
you.
Meeting you, Erica.
Okay.
Thank you. Nice meeting you, too.
All right. Ms. Brooks, okay, why don't we do this? You still got a lot of folk here online.
I have actually one more person, okay. Dewan. He's on the phone. He's a Chicago native Kanye West fan. You know, he's been dying to give his perspective on this issue.
Okay.
He's a community activist. He currently stays in Atlanta, Georgia. So, okay. Dewan, are you still on the phone?
I am. I'm here.
All right, brother. Do you have a moment to share your perspective on this issue?
Definitely.
Okay. You have the floor.
So, first off, I want to thank you, and I also want to thank everybody else for having me online.
Yes, thank you for coming.
No doubt. It's a lot of really good perspective that I'm listening to, and I've been taking notes to just try to make sure that I form my standpoint the proper way so that it, you know, will receive it the way it's supposed to be received. So, the first thing that I want to talk about is, okay, we all know what the statement is, right? Slavery was a choice. That's what we dissected out of the whole 30-minute, hour and a half interview, whatever, however long it was that he had. That's what we dissected out of it, right, to have a conversation about tonight. And then we also want to, like, focus in on that point. Like, it's the only thing that was said, and it wasn't the only thing that was said, okay? But I'm going to take that point out, and I'm going to expound on it like everybody else did tonight. I think that in his perspective is not all the way wrong. His delivery was partially wrong. And it's partially wrong because we in America, especially us black people nowadays, we don't understand how to receive brute thought. I grew up with a mother that was a little bit more brute than other mothers. She's 77 now. I'm 31. So that means that she was in her late 40s, 50s, when I came around. Mm-hmm. And she didn't have the time to go through the cycles of explaining things to kids and things of that nature. So she barely said, "I love you." And she made sure that when she said whatever she said, that she meant what she said, and it didn't always feel good when she said it. And I think that's what we have to take into account with statements that we're hearing from people, when we're hearing them from Trump, when we're hearing them from our boss, when we're hearing them from Kanye West, when we're hearing them from whoever. These statements may not be coming across the way that we want them to come across. That doesn't mean that there's no validity to the statement, okay? And I do think that Kanye West is not only a musical genius, but he's graduated from the Art Institute of Chicago, if I'm thinking correctly, in like summa cum laude or something like that, whatever high degree he has, but he's very intelligent. And what I think we're seeing is when you speak to someone, I've met some of them in person, but when you speak to someone who is on this level of whatever kind of intelligence, their mind is moving faster than their thoughts are. I mean, their mind is moving faster than their mouth, or their mouth is moving faster than their thoughts are. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I had that backwards. Their mouth is moving faster than their thoughts are, okay? So I think that when I read it on Facebook and I seen Kanye West said slavery was a choice, he's stupid, or what the, you know, whatever, or he's a fool, or this and this and that, I was kind of taken back as well, like everybody else was. And I think that's probably how most people found out about it, right? We don't watch TMZ because we're at work or we're doing something else constructive. And I seen it on Facebook. And when I seen it, I'm like, nah, that can't be. That can't be, because I don't like to take things that are given to me as the whole truth. I like to take them in, analyze them, research it, or whatever the process may be, to make sure that I'm not only thinking or to make sure that I'm not only feeling something that, you know, is substantial, but that it's really real and it really aligns with who I am as a person. So I think that another good thing that he brought out is babies, kids are free. You have to remember that the system that you live in creates the rules that you live by in your life, so to speak. The old saying, when you're in Rome, you act as the Romans. And it's the same thing here in America, right? We want to live by the system that we're in. Some of us don't want to be a part of the system, but it benefits us in certain ways, and it doesn't benefit us in other ways. You know, so we have to realize that, okay, slavery was not a choice. We all know the initial act of slavery was not a choice, right? But the trend of slavery at some point had to be a choice. I mean, if I'm thinking correctly, slavery, the transatlantic slave trade ended in like 1807, and then the actual Emancipation Proclamation became law in 1863, right? So that's 155 years. 1863 to 2018 is 155 years that we've been living as a choice under the laws of the land, which were created to enslave us and benefit the other. When we came out of slavery in 1863, we had congressmen, we had senators, we had people of high-level positions that were articulate, that knew the laws of the land, and that also knew how to speak, convey, and control and present ideas that would help benefit our people in place. What happened is that laws and things of that nature came about to kick those people out. The issue was, to me, is that we did not come up with a system within the system or a whole nother system at the system's beginning to be able to counteract what they were doing. And at that point, to me, it became a choice. Because just like I've heard a couple of people say on the phone right now, is we, like, the fact that we're not together, so to speak, means that, you know, we can't really get ahead together because we're all kind of broken apart. Right. We all see I could do a status like one of the callers said, I could do a status and I could reach about 3,000 or 4,000 people right now. But it depends on how many people are going to act on it, you know, to be able to make it substantial, which I agree with. But I think that the most important thing is that everyone says that, hey, we ain't, you know, we can't come together. Well, you're making it true by saying we can't come together. Because if everyone said, hey, you know what, we can come together and do something, then our minds would be positioned to come together and do something. We'd be more receptive when someone else that looks like us comes up with an idea that we think that we could help them put together and help benefit our people. And that's one of the issues that I think that we have as a community to get, like, as a whole. What we would rather do is, it seems, is condemn people and leave them for dead whenever they have a position that is different from ours, which is why we're having this conversation. Instead of us going, well, let me try to understand what you're saying, man. Let me try to understand what you're saying. This thought is different from things that I think. Let me try to see where you're coming from. What's the perspective? And I think ultimately, like, at the beginning of his statement, he was going through the mental process, right? Like, his mouth was moving way faster than his mind was. Like, he hadn't really thought about what he was saying when he was saying it. That's why he had to go, well, not slavery, right? Let's just, because slavery really focuses in on the black culture. Just like the Holocaust focuses in on the Jewish culture. Let's just say mental prison. Mm-hmm. He didn't, like, that's exactly what he was saying. We are all enslaved mentally now. As a whole, not all of us, but as a whole, okay? And I think that after these whole 155 years that we've been free of so-called slavery, it has been a choice to be mentally enslaved. We have not allowed the truth to be free, right? We have not understood our heritage as a whole as we should. Like, some of these people who are coming, not on this call, but as a whole that I've heard, are people who are just now becoming introduced to what it means to be black, right? Not even just black, but what does it mean to be a of African descent? What is your heritage? What is your real history? Some of these people on this phone call may not even be people who are free thinkers. They may not be able to think outside of the confinements of what social reality is. And we got to remember, social media has a reality. It's a social reality. This is what the people who are on here are thinking about, what they're basing their life decisions upon, so on and so forth. Right? And we have become a people, not a country, but we have become a people of intolerance. But a people of intolerance without true direction.
Okay, that's one of the things that I wanted to do here. I wanted to give young people, this boys, to talk about maybe what some folk are not seeing. And this is very powerful. I'm sorry to cut you off. I do have, like I said, we do have some.
Oh, others, it's all good, bro.
And I want to bring on some of the elders that I know that are online as well to add to this conversation. But before I do that, I want to lay 2 points on the table that I want us to think about, you know, as we are going through this critique. And like I said, we wanted to do this format. Ms. Brooks and I discussed it earlier. We didn't want to make this a debate. So that's one of the reasons why we are not interrupting with a whole lot of questions and saying I disagree with you. I mean, and we all may have our agreements and disagreements, but we wanted to make sure that we could get out clearly what folks' positions might be. And that way, at that point, you can explain how, you know, obviously the way you feel. But there are 2 points I want to lay on the table, historical factors that I think that I would like for our conversationalists to consider. Number one, there is a movement going on in America right now, and it's being implemented by some very powerful Caucasian men. One of them is the Koch brothers. K-O-C-H. They are the ones that own companies like Georgia Pacific. They own Barney Paper Towers. And they are funding ultra-conservative right-wing agendas. And right now, they have pulled together an educational group. And they are funding that educational group to write curriculums to tone down slavery. They want that to be implemented in the public schools of America. They've already been able to implement it, I understand, from North Carolina. North Carolina, some part of North Carolina, has an agenda now that they're using that comes from the Koch brothers' financing and development. And just real briefly, I don't have time to go through the curriculum, but one of the things on the curriculum is that slavery wasn't that bad. That actually it had some redeeming factors, and that many people wanted to be enslaved because they saw that as a way of lifting themselves out of the darkness of Africa. Now, that's an argument that's been going on for a long time, but this now is going to be a part. Now, they're going to do it a little bit slicker than that. They're not going to make it, they're not going to say that, but when it boils down to the discussion, that's what they're going to use and how it's going to be done. They do have the wealth to do that, and that is going on right now. So you can, those of you who might be interested, Google the Koch brothers and look at what they've done. And the statement that Kanye made is the very same statement that's a part of the curriculum of the Koch brothers. Now, I'm not saying that's where he got it from. I'm not saying that they told him to say that. I'm just laying that on the table as a discussion. Number two, a lot of what is being said around this argument, basically, from my perspective, now this is my own personal perspective, is coming as a classic example of the book written by Carter G. Woodson called The Miseducation of the Negro. There is a miseducation that has occurred in America in reference to African Americans. Now, the brother just mentioned that earlier, and he said that. I'm so glad he did say that. We have not been taught our culture and our history. We have not been taught in the way that we need to have it to understand things like trauma, to understand things like internalized oppression, to understand things like menticide. We haven't been trained and taught and given the resources to understand that clearly where we can put it in operation in our day-to-day lives. That's well known. Everybody knows that. It's been discussed. There are organizations working to try to redo that. There are books that have been written to try to bring that to light and try to show that. So the idea then is that the educational process of this, this is what that really speaks to from my perspective, is that there's been some poor education going on. And if we had had the proper education, there's a possibility that we might not have been able, we might not be having this discussion today, because nobody in the public forum would get up and make a statement that I happen to disagree with, that slavery was by choice. So anyway, I want to lay those two things on the table, and then we're going to come back and we're going to listen to our panel. Miss Brooks, do you have anybody else you want to put on there? We've got time is going to go real fast on us, but I still want to hear all of the folk that you had.
No, sir. That was everybody. That was everybody on my panel.
Okay, good. All right. Well, then what I want to do real quickly is that, as I said earlier, this is the Time for Awakening network system. It's a part of Black Talk Radio Network, and we hope that many of you who have been just as being introduced the first time to this will continue to listen. We have several programs that are aired on this program, very dynamic discussions, very similar to the one that we are talking now. On Monday evenings from 6 p.m. to 8, there is a program called Acres of Diamonds, and it airs from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Time for Awakening Network. Also, on Monday from 8 to 9 p.m., there's a program called Let's Buy Black, Let's Buy Black 365. And that airs every Monday from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. on the Time for Awakening Network. And then the Black Reality Think Tank, which is our program here today, airs every Tuesday from 8 to 10, as I've indicated. And then on Wednesday from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., there's a program called Revive. It's called Revive, and it's hosted by Proof of Consciousness. And that airs every Wednesday from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And then on Thursday, Ulu, Us Lifting Us, hosts Baba Kembizi and Sister Nanara. That comes on every Thursday from 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. It's called Ulu. It's about cooperative economics and discussing ways that we can pull our money together. Us Lifting Us, every Thursday evening from 9 to 10 p.m. And then on Friday, the founder of the Time for Awakening Network broadcast, Mr. Elliot Booker, he comes on Friday from 8 to 11 p.m. with his host, Brother Richard. Dynamic programs. Once you go to that website and see some of the guests that he has had on his program, he just had Professor Smalls was on recently. The economist, Professor Darity, was on recently. And he has done a wonderful job of doing that. So, Brother Elliot, Time for Awakening, every Friday from 8 to 11 p.m. And then on Saturday, there is a sports talk program called SSS Saturday Sports Talk. And it's hosted by Troy Wilmore every Saturday from 10 a.m. to 12 noon on Eastern Time here on Time for Awakening Network. And then on Sunday morning, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Revive comes again. Proof of Consciousness is the host. That's on Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And then Brother Elliot Booker returns on Sunday evening from 7 to 10, and Time for Awakening with him and Brother Elliot. African Perspectives, I don't want to forget that. Brother African Perspectives, who is the sponsor for the the Black Talk Radio system. He has a program that comes on every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. African Perspectives hosts Brother Oshi Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And I messed up that introduction when I said he hosted Time for Awakening. He doesn't host that. He is the sponsor for this program, Black Talk. Talking so fast, I got a Black Reality Think Tank. So that's what he's doing that. So anyway, let's move on. I want to go to our elders. We have several that are on the line that I'd like to bring forward. Some are regular listeners to our program. We have my good brother at 602, area code 60243. Good afternoon, my brother. How are you today?
Yes, Dr. Rogers. This is Brother Marcus.
Right, Brother Marcus.
Calling. Good to hear the young people on the radio, you know. Good to hear them getting their thoughts together and, you know.
Right.
Personally, I say Kanye West. is a moron. Simple. You know, the guy, anybody who, he didn't even go and marry somebody who looked like his mother. He went to go get some strumpet from somewhere. So I have no respect for that guy. Anything that guy said is irrelevant because he's a knucklehead. All right? Definitely bipolar, as his sister said. Now, we have to look into perspective, though. We got to remember that, you know, after Emancipation Proclamation, after 250 years of slavery, the damage that was done to the black mind was never corrected.
Right.
You see, the psychological trauma that black people went through was never addressed. And it's really, we up until probably in the early 1980s, our psychologists start to analyze it and break it down. So you don't know what you don't know, okay? Right. You're sick and you don't know it, you know? And a lot of our people are sick. We are psychologically damaged goods. That has already happened. Okay, you know, so what we have to do is correct the psychological damage, you know, and we do it through programs like this. Other psychologists, lead psychologists like Dr. Chris Westling, mm-hmm. or Professor Amos Wilson, right? Sure. Bobby, the brother that talk about fratricide, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we are, as I said, we are psychologically damaged as a people. And there is no solution for us here in America. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
400 years should show us that. And if not, say we didn't try in America. We have examples of Tulsa, Oklahoma, Rosewood, different communities
mm-hmm.
that were destroyed. So you're not going to build a black empire here in America. The 400 years has demonstrated that it's not something wrong with us. It's just the people in this system say, look, you're not going to build nothing here. You see, you have to look to your motherland, Africa, where the greater mass majority of your people rest. That's where the solution lies for black people. See, you don't see them lynching Chinese people. You don't see, because China got 1.4 billion people here ready to respond. And until we develop something like that in Africa for ourselves, where we can defend, where Africa could rise up and say, no, you're not going to, it's going to continue. But anyway, I am encouraged by the talk and keep on doing what you're doing with people. Yeah, take care. Thank you
so much, Brother Marcus. Thank you. Ms. Brooks, you want to respond, or either one of your guests?
I do. I definitely do. I'm so happy Brother Marcus brought that up, that, you know, it's a mind thing. And, you know, he also made mention and gave reference to a solution, you know, but okay. What is the way that we solve things? If we don't know that there's a problem, how can we solve it? Mm-hmm. So even though we may think that this guy is a moron, he's an idiot, he did bring this issue to the forefront, and he said, hey, there's a choice. What if owning that we had a choice is the first part of acceptance? You know, what if that's acknowledgement? What if that is the passport to a solution and to a future? You know, us, you know, playing victim, I don't, you know what, I take that back. Us looking at our ancestors as victims and not looking at them as having that choice or having the ability to make a change, because, I mean, there were people who made changes in that situation. It's not about what I would have done. It's about what happened, you know. And in this case, you know, people had a choice, and we keep on taking that away. You know, we keep on talking about a solution, but what if the solution is acceptance and acknowledgement first? You know, they use that tool in AA and everywhere else. Mm-hmm. Why can't we use it to improve the mindset and the mentality of our people?
Okay. I like that. Let me go to another one of, well, I think he's right on the borderline of being an elder, not quite probably, but Mr. Pugh from Baton Rouge. I see you on the line, Mr. Pugh. He's a regular participant to the Black Reality Think Tank. Mr. Pugh, do you have a point here about Kanye West and what he said?
I will, hello?
Yes, I'm here. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I would say that you know, your observations about the Koch brothers and what they're doing, it suggests that Kanye's comments were tragic, because obviously they can be used by our enemies against us.
Right.
But I think the gentleman from Atlanta, Chicago, he made, I thought, some pretty wise observations when he pointed out that, you know, that our actions, that the choices that we make actually lead to certain results, and that, you know, by the things that we do, we can essentially reproduce our pathologies. But I would say that one of the issues that we have, the reason that people listen to their elders and the reason that people listen to their ancestors is because the business of making choices, of using your choice, is very perilous. It's very easy for you to think that you're doing the right thing and you're not actually doing the right thing. And so one of the reasons you listen to your elders is because they're people who are likely to have been around the circle of life and therefore have some insights into how decision processes turn out. The reason you listen to your ancestors mm-hmm. is because you recognize that if it weren't for what they did, you wouldn't be able to even get to this point. Mm-hmm. So I think that part of the issue that we have is sort of like, you know, if you imagine 100 people, and each of these people have a different ideal as to what their solutions are, and as a result, they're pulling in different directions. Each of them wants to be free, but they've got different definitions of what freedom is and what it takes to get to become free. And then, of course, you have these hostile others who are essentially manipulating the situation. So I think that's what's that's a way to characterize our situation. And by the way, I want to just make one observation to Ms. Brooks. When I first came on, she was talking and she said something that I think was tragic, and I want to speak to it directly. She said we're an emotional people and that we need to move away from our emotions and all of that kind of stuff if we want to be successful. Well, let me be clear.
Brother, that wasn't me.
Well, what you said is that that we're emotional, we make emotional decisions, and that, you know, and I want to speak to that directly. Mm-hmm.
That was Sister Jessica C, but I'll let you finish.
Okay. All right. I don't know who it was, but it was someone. All right. So I'll just say this, that to make logical decisions are just calculations. So it's sort of like, you know, if you decide what is the price of this house versus what is the price of that house, those are two calculations. But the decision as to which one of those houses you're going to get, that's a judgment. All judgments are based on emotions. And so in fact, my definition of a slave, it's a person who's decided that that they're afraid to use their emotions. One of the things that that we have in our society is that these professionals, are slaves to me, because what they are is they're people who believe that that you shouldn't wear your heart on your sleeve, that nice guys finish last. That is to say that you should keep your emotions out of your decision process. Mm-hmm. But what that means is that if you keep your emotions out, then that means that you're basically a zombie, because all your judgments are made by somebody else's emotions. So I just want to emphasize that you necessarily have to use your heart, because that's what determines what judgments you're going to make. What you use your mind for are just calculations, and that's why, for example, that can be replaced with computers and robots and whatnot.
Right.
But I'll just end it there.
Okay. Ms. Brooks, you want to add to that?
Well, I just want to give Sister Jay Peace an opportunity. Jessica, are you still on the line?
Yes, she's still.
Yes, I'm still here, Sister.
Okay. Did you want to respond to that? Because his response was directly towards you. Did you want to respond to that, Sister?
Absolutely. I will respond to that. Thank you. So I just have to say, you know, thank you for being an elder. I'll just have to extend that. However, I have to tend to disagree with you in regards to emotions and making logical and rational decisions. Any judge that would sit in a magistrate position and have to decide or make a deciding factor in regards to what one would consider to be righteous or wrong has to be void of making an emotional decision. That's why our country is afraid of having a woman as a potential leader of the country, because of the emotional capacity that women naturally have, because we nourish all the children. So it's natural for women to be emotional. However, there's a balance that has to come into play in regards to our emotions, and not to, because emotions is energy in motion. So where is this energy going, and how is this energy transpiring from this particular being that we are? Because we're all energy-based beings. We vibrate on different frequencies. And so one emotion can be way left field. Another emotion can be on the other field, positive or negative, those two polarities. And so if you are making decisions based in emotions, then it may not necessarily be a rational or logical decision that is being presented if you do it based in emotion. There's nothing wrong having compassion in regards to a particular judgment that you need to make, which I think that is necessary. What I don't think is necessary is to be emotional about it. It's like a child. It's like a childlike mind, like children. We know that they get emotional about everything, and so they have to learn how to balance their emotions and not make decisions on their emotions. Like if I tell my child no, and I'm making a logical, rational decision to tell her no, because if she steps off the balcony, she'll fall off on the stairs or something, and she whines and cries and pouts about it. That's her showing her emotion to me to let me know that she doesn't want to do that or whatever the case may be. But it's irrational. Her emotion is irrational, but I understand that coming from a child. However, for an adult, a supposedly adult, mature woman or man, we cannot act in the same fashion in regards to making decisions. We have to be rational and logical and intelligent in our decisions and allow our emotions to be necessary when needed. That doesn't mean that we're void of our soul and our heart, because those go hand in hand in regards to making a logical or rational decision. Like in a court of law, the judge has to be void of their emotions, because it could be where they have to make a decision on something that may be touching to them, but they cannot be biased to their emotions to make the decision a logical or rational decision. I'm a firm knower in that we should act in compassion in regards to what we do, and I should be kind or whatever. But however, I will not be foolish and be emotional to make a decision in regards to being logical and rational.
Mr. Pugh, you have a counter response to that?
Yeah. Let me make a few tight responses. First of all, the one word that I left out that really was critical is the word values. I didn't mention the word values. And so the case of the child and the case of the judge are really inappropriate. The reason the case of the judge is inappropriate is because the judge is basically designed to be a neutral arbiter. In other words, the reason you select a judge is you're saying that, hey, look, there are these two people who have a dispute, and what we want you to do is apply the facts and the law and not your personal judgments, right? And so therefore, the judge is out of bounds. And similarly, the case of the child is out of bounds, because you've got a situation where the child hasn't gone through a logical process in the first place. And so your decision to tell it that it shouldn't do a certain thing, that's just the appropriate decision. But here's the test case that you can see what's being talked about. Someone mentioned the example of going to Mars. Well, the decision of what's required to go to Mars, what kind of energy, what kind of cost, et cetera, those are all calculations. Those are all logical calculations.
Now, someone else can say, well, you know, for that $1 billion or whatever that you're going to use to go to Mars, you can take that same $1 billion and you can do that to do something about homelessness or do something about some other social problem. And once again, that's a calculation. But the decision of whether or not you're going to spend the $1 billion to go toward Mars or the $1 billion to go toward homelessness, that's a judgment. That depends on your values. That's not a logical calculation. And if you don't have, if you don't bring your values to you, then what ends up happening is you're bringing somebody else's values. And so what ends up happening with us, for example, is that we'll get a job. And we're afraid to show our values because we don't want whites to show hatred toward us, and so therefore we don't want to show any bias against them. But what will happen is that there will be points where we have to make a decision where our values are involved, and instead of using our values, what we do is we default to the values of our boss or the values of others, which are hostile towards. So I just want to be clear that your values, your decision that, for example, there are some parents who are more concerned about keeping their children dependent upon them for the rest of their life, and there are other parents who are concerned about raising children to be an adult, right? Now, each of those are value judgments, but the calculation as to what you need to do to keep a child dependent versus what you need to do to develop a child that's independent, those are simply logical decisions. So I don't want to just go on and on and on.
Ms. Perry, you wanted to respond to him, and then I'm going to go to another caller. Ms. Perry?
Well, actually, Dr. Rogers, Allegra wanted to respond to him.
Oh, okay,
him.
I'm sorry. Ms. Bryant? Go right
Allegra.
Ahead.
Okay, so I was kind of taking notes because there was a few things that were said kind of along the way. And I just kind of want to go back to Dwayne saying, you know, he didn't really think about what he was saying. And it's interesting to me how one minute he's this great thinker, and I'm not taking anything away from his intelligence. But then on the other hand, it's like, oh, but he supports Trump. So which one is he thinking? Is he not thinking? Like, which side are we going to be on? And so, and to speak on that whole thing about us being an emotional people, and I found that really interesting that we, I think it was Jessica saying we need to put our emotions aside. I think that in and of itself is what makes us fundamentally very different from white people. And so I think there's also, I want to highlight that there's a difference between being emotionally unstable and having emotional intelligence. And I really just find it interesting that y'all are following a completely emotionally unstable man, genius or not, and y'all are going with it like what he's saying is cool. And at the end of the day, if we remove the emotion from who we are as a people, that empathy that we have for each other, and even the empathy that we have for other people and their struggles, I think we're more likely to fall into that trap that they really want us to fall into. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting because I highlighted that y'all were talking about the Koch brothers and the textbooks. I put up a status on Facebook and I said, you know, it's so interesting to me that y'all are, you know, if slavery was a choice, then by y'all's logic, you shouldn't have been outraged at the textbooks that said black people came over here voluntarily to work, right? Or were you? Right. So for those same people that were like, oh my God, this is a travesty. I think there was a mother in Texas that was one of the first ones that, you know, publicized her child's textbook. Like this was in the book, like it was, you know, working migration, and everybody was so outraged. And then now you're saying, but slavery was a choice. Well, which one is it? Pick one. Right. So, you know, I just find it very, I don't know, disrespectful to our ancestors. Okay. And I think that as black people, as brown people, we need to definitely hold on to the emotional part that's culturally ours.
Okay. All right, Mr. Griffin, would you like to add something to this conversation? I would definitely appreciate your notes that you have sending. Anything you'd like to add to this?
Yes. Hello to the young ladies I've been listening to, and I'm glad I'm finally reaching the age of 64 because my head probably would have exploded. I'll go through this kind of quickly and try to keep it on point so people understand what I'm saying. I'm 64 years old. I'm Yorktown, Virginia. I'm about 25 or 30 miles away from where Jamestown is, so I'm trying to say some of this thing because I get the impression most of these people know some of this history.
Right.
But when you say that our people had a choice, and you take someone like Kanye West and try to put some kind of high rate of intelligent thought for that, I can tell you, please back up. I put a lot of things in this in the chat room. I hope if you can get access to it from your computer,
yes,
that you check out some of it, because I don't like to tell people what to believe, but I can tell you this. This country has been set up to obscure and erase our true history.
Yes, it is.
As Professor Gerald Horn says from the University of Houston, it's really only been the last 20 to 25 years that we Black academics or people of color or carbon-based, whatever you want to label us, that we've actually had access to actual documents and records. And part of that reason is because our people were property. Mm-hmm. Understand, there was no census for us. We were bill of goods. We owned bill of ladings. We were sold. I'm miles away from Hampton University, where they tell, where there's a fishing wharf where some of my ancestors were sold on a slave block. So when you say our people didn't resist, you don't understand that most of the universities up and down this East Coast that make up the 13 original colonies, there's not a single university that has done any kind of construction in the last 30 years and not dug up the bones of the resistors. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about individual graves. I'm talking about mass graves. I put a few in there. Thibodeau down in Louisiana, a massacre. Wilmington, a massacre. You know some of the other ones, Tulsa. Right. So when you're told that there was no resistance and there's a choice, you're really taking this beyond the facts. The facts are, you and I are the descendants of the people who witnessed the atrocities. So there was resistance. And you better be glad there wasn't resistance. And you better be glad that those who lived past it went on to have children, so you'll be here. So don't get high and mighty and talk about there's choice. No, there was not a choice. We had survivors of those that made the choice to die. And when I hear things like what happened to us when we were making it, this country has been so vile till when you look at Reconstruction, the Landry Massacre was actually in a capital in Louisiana,
right,
with Black Republican elected officials. Red shirts and citizen councils were real. One of the most prescient ones that I knew of happened when I was 2 years old. George W. Lee, a Black minister and entrepreneur who was shot because he was trying to register people to vote long before 1963 or 64. It would behoove some of you young, bright minds to actually go back and get some of the facts. And I tell you, I think you'll become more steeled against the system. You'll stop thinking that free thought was the only thing that held us back, because you can't just thought your way out of this. You're going to have to be able to base your decisions on true facts. And I beg you to stop believing that some kind of way positive thinking will get you out there. This is no Oprah fix. This is no Cooper fix or whatever these latest gurus are. This is a reality check fix.
Right.
We have a right, after being the currency for this nation to build its wealth, we have a right to bind together and do exactly what Jews and corporations do and the Koch brothers do. Demand that some of those taxpayer dollars go back to building our communities. And I'll mute myself.
Amen. Amen. Okay, we have I have a young lady that I want to, well, an elder, who's been very active in the community of working on internalized oppression and kind of looking at the idea. Her position is that we have not addressed that properly. And what we are witnessing among our people is the result of not addressing internalized oppression, menticide, PTSD, all some of those things that we hear a lot about. Her name is Miss Ayan. She's from Greensboro. Miss Ayan, any comments on Brother Kanye West?
You know, I am, first of all, greetings to everyone that's listening and that's in on this call. And Dr. Rogers, don't be mad at me, but I literally just got in the house. I had a long meeting,
okay.
And I just caught the last 10 minutes or so of this conversation.
Oh, okay.
So if I'm redundant, that would be why.
Okay.
And I'll try to keep my comments short because I was really absorbing some of the things that were said. The brother that just spoke was just phenomenal. And I think Brother Pugh was just phenomenal. But, you know, in America, we've been brainwashed, bamboozled, you know, Malcolm told us, ever since we've been here. We've been lied to about who we are. We haven't adequately learned our history at all. At all. I'm 61. There are many of us that are just learning our critical parts of our history. For instance, I heard somebody talk about resistance. Did anybody heard of Robert Charles? Hello?
Yeah, they're on. I'm not sure. What's the name again? I guess
Robert Charles.
Anyone, member of our panelists, heard of Robert Charles?
Okay, so I'm just going to move on.
Yeah,
Robert Charles was a black man in the, I think, the early 1900s, and he had been harassed by police just like we are now. He got tired of it. The man went and got his rifle, and he killed about 27 white folk. Mm. He just killed them up because he got so tired of being harassed by police, and they were coming after him. He knew that they were going to kill him. So he said, I know you're going to kill me, but I'm going to take some of you out before you get me.
What part of the country was that?
I think this was New Orleans.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think it was New Orleans. And so we have so many people that fought back as single persons. This brother took on the police force, and he took some out with him, and then they killed them, and they stomped them to death. They chopped them up and did what they usually do. We've had such a long history of torture, mm-hmm, in this country that young people don't know about. If there are any young people, whatever young people on the call, Without Sanctuary gives you a pictorial history of the torture that we've gone through. And there's no way that you can escape that torture but through death. So there were only two choices: fight back and die, or live and deal with this thing the best way you can.
Okay. Hold on a second. We've got some static.
Hello?
Okay. All right. I'm sorry. There was some static.
Okay.
Okay.
The other thing is, I don't know if anybody mentioned this, but did anybody ask the question if Tamir Rice had a choice? Eric Garner, you know, all the brothers that have been shot in the back and killed and murdered by police, did they have a choice?
That's a good point. Good point.
Did anybody ask that question?
No, that wasn't asked.
Okay. And I would strongly suggest that we all go on YouTube and learn our history. If you don't want to read a book, learn your history through documentaries. There's one called The White Man's Burden. Every young black person needs to read that. And it talks about how Europeans have gone over the world where black people are, Africans are, brown people, and have murdered millions, invaded and murdered. Okay. The Tasmanians were a group of black people off the southern coast of Australia. Europeans invaded Tasmania and killed off every single one of them so that there are no more Tasmanians left on this earth. And somebody tell me what they could have done to prevent that massacre. Total destruction of a whole race of people. The people that were here that we call the Indians that are living on reservations right now committing suicide because they're living in so much torment. So in terms of internalized oppression, when the people go through that much torture and torment, one of the first things that happens is denial. We deny that the oppressor has the power to do to us what they do to us.
Right.
Well, so people say, well, if I was in slavery, I would have done so and so. Yes, you would have. If you had a choice between death And not just death, but I'm stressing torture. They cut off our fingers. They cut off our hands, cut off the genitals. Torture and torment to make sure that you didn't fight back. So there's so many psychological weaponry that was used against us that it's just shocking that we're even still surviving, frankly.
So would you say that a part of the internalized oppression process, as you said, number one, is to deny, and then obviously as you deny, you then begin to blame yourself that you are wrong?
You blame each other.
Yeah.
And you blame each other.
So therefore you start saying things, we had a choice. Like I hear that, I'll tell you where I hear that sometimes, in issues of domestic violence. With women at some point began to say, well, you know, I deserved it. I should have kept my mouth shut. I shouldn't have said this to him. I shouldn't have done that. Or either there's a resistance to leave and go away from that situation. Is that the same thing? Is that the same process that's taking place?
Yeah, pretty much so. You know,
We
develop victim mentalities. We blame ourselves for being victimized, and we're in denial, like what you're talking about, being in denial about actually being victims. But by denying that you've been victimized, you develop a victim mentality.
I get you. And that's
because
what
work through, you don't face up to the fact that you've actually been victimized. And that's what I'm hearing, that a lot of us have a serious problem. I've been hearing this for years, facing the fact that we are an oppressed and we have been tortured.
Okay.
I think I was sharing with you today, Doc, that my parents had a picture of a man that was hanging from a tree in their closet. He had been lynched. And I always wonder what that man's name was. Who was he? This was a real-life person that was tortured and lynched. And my parents kept the picture in their closet and never talked about it. So in terms of internalized oppression, the torture that we've gone through, we don't talk about it. We go into some type of denial. We want to go new age, and I heard somebody make a reference to positive thinking and whatnot. That's not going to heal you from the torture, the generational pain that resulted from oppression and torture that you're carrying. So you're not just carrying what happened to you in this lifetime. You're carrying your parents' pain and your grandparents' pain. It's literally transferred down in the DNA and through the behavior in the way that we parent. So there's a lot to this. And I want to say another quick thing about Kanye West. He's a part of an industry where people are being forced into homosexual activities. One thing if you're homosexual, but when you're forced into it and you agree to do it so that you can have your position, that's a problem. They're forced into bleaching their skin, looking as white as possible, getting surgery on their body parts because the thighs are too thick, you know, getting these extended behinds that look totally insane. So they're mutilating their bodies in order to be a part of this machine, this sick machine of entertainment. I wouldn't listen to anybody like that. I wouldn't listen to anybody that's a part of that. So until you learn your history, do some study, I would suggest that people listen to learn and learn to listen and keep an open mind.
Okay. All right. Ms. Brooks, we've got about 15 minutes left.
11 minutes. I definitely want to respond to the sister quickly. I think that the perception of young people not knowing their history needs to be addressed because you have a panel full of conscious people and they feel this way. I have a library full of books. I have some of the books that you even mentioned, Without Sanctuary. I was one of the first people to purchase that book. I am an activist in my community and I teach my child his history. I think to say that I don't know my history when I'm a direct descendant from Nat Turner is kind of like an insult, you know, and I want people to understand it. We are conscious people. We are seeing that, you know, it's a messed up choice that our ancestors had. It doesn't belittle them and their experience. It doesn't belittle what we went through and what they experienced for us to get here. You know, I don't want that to be overshadowed. You know, I definitely understand the pain, and I understand what sacrifices our people have made. I was a student of Dr. Rogers, you know, so I understand African-American history on a whole nother level. I'm a Pan-Africanist. I love Marcus Garvey. So do not think that I am I'm not conscious, or I don't know who I am and I don't know where I come from, because I definitely do. I want people who are listening to this to understand that, yes, we understand Tamar Rice did not have a choice. We understand those people who were assassinated. This is a direct response to us being mentally enslaved, because at the end of the day, what is stopping us from revolting now? What's stopping us from resisting now? We are put in a system where our people are mentally enslaved, and we sleep when a child is shot up and gunned down in our community. We're not saying anything. We're not speaking. There's no action behind it. So I think acceptance, acknowledgement, because at first, I didn't agree. I thought Kanye was crazy. I'm not a fan. I don't listen to his music. But when I really thought about the words, when I really thought about what the brother was saying, and when I really owned the fact that, hey, death was a choice for our people, I was able to see it from a different perspective. And this sister even said, you know, there was a choice of death or torture. At the end of the day, regardless on if it's a choice that you would be in agreement to or a choice that is comfortable for you, there's a choice. The difference between making a choice and not being able to make a choice or whatever is consequences. When a choice is made, there are consequences to your action. The consequences to the actions were death or brutality. But at the end of the day, it was a choice. And I think that's, I know we have short on time, so I'll let you respond, Dr. Rogers.
Okay, I want to ask
Doc, can I respond real quick since she was responding
very
to me?
Very quickly, because I have another caller that wants to come on.
Okay, so I want you to know that I'm not suggesting that all young people don't know their history. What I'm saying, when people talk out the side of their mouths, and I think Kanye West was talking about out of the side of something, another orifice, then they clearly don't know their history, the wholeness of their history in terms of the psychological damage that resulted from the history. That's what we don't know a lot about, okay. And we need to study more. Okay. The second thing, if I was young once and many of us were young once, we felt the same way that you do. And believe me, with all the people that feel like we should do something, we could have done something, it would have been done if it were possible. If it were possible.
Think,
so the young people
I
that feel, so. Let me say this real quick. The young people I'm with you that feel like, hey, we need to do something. Why are we not? Get up and do it. Because that's
I
what we've always, we've gotten up and we've done it.
Mm-hmm. It's not the woulda, coulda, shoulda, and I don't think anybody has said it on the panel today. I think the response is, why is it a problem to say that death was a choice? Why not own that? When we take ownership of that, we take the power away from the situation, and we open up the door for a solution. We open up the door for opportunity for us to do something better, for us to make a change. And I think by us holding on to that and becoming victims, we become victims to the situation, and we have an inability to make a choice to improve our situation so we can make a change. We stop the solution by stopping here. And it doesn't matter if we're wrong or we're right. We need to come up with a solution so we can move forward. You know,
what
at
I'm
the
saying,
end of the day,
sister, is that
what,
that's what we've done. We've done that for the past 400 years. We've come up with solutions. We've fought back. And the sickness of Eurocentric culture keeps pulling us back. If we get back to unity, if we get back to self-love, and regardless of our philosophies and our belief systems, walk together and work together, we can get somewhere. But as long as we're divided on something that some silly man, and I'm saying that's how I feel, a silly man like Kanye West says, then we have a long way to go.
Okay. All right, Mr. Griffin.
I don't think he's silly. I think that he made a choice to, you know, bring this to the forefront. And it was very calculated, but it's causing us to talk about it. You know, a couple years ago, we refused to talk about it when Birth of a Nation came out. We had black women saying, we're not going to support this black man about this black film because he's married to a white woman.
Mm-hmm.
We supported Snoop when he said, oh, I'm not going to watch slavery movies when A New Roots came out or whatever, because we didn't want to support one another. Albert Einstein said the significant problems we face
cannot be solved in the same level of thinking we were in when they were created. Sister, we in the same level of thinking we were in hundreds of years ago. We got to change the way we look at the problem and come up with different solutions.
Okay. Brother Griffin.
And that's all I have to say.
Brother Griffin?
Oh, what you say? What you say, Dr. Rogers?
No, Brother Griffin wanted to make a statement.
Okay. I just want to say, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Mm-hmm.
I just want to say quickly, it's bigger than Kanye, hats, hugs, and colonial relations. That's on Jared Ball's I Mix What I Like. Go to it. It gives you a lot of information, and you might not be so quick to think that what Kanye said was some kind of gift of intellect. And the reason I say that is because no one, in rap or hip hop makes it without the call of two individuals. And those two individuals are on that very same picture in the tweet that Kanye made right after having a business meeting with them to put out his new album. I'm not going to point fingers. I'm going to go say the same thing that was said by a supposedly woke sister on Trayvon Martin's jury. Please, knowledge yourself.
Okay. Okay. All right. Okay. This is wonderful. This has been a dynamic conversation. Ms. Brooks, I'm going to let you close us out. You've been a wonderful co-host today. I know you're going to be coming back on and talking about some other issues involving young people's thinking. We're going to merge that with elders' discussions, and so we want to continue to do that. And this is going to be a great opportunity for young folk and the elders to talk, to share their ideas, try to provide some type of understanding and dialogue. And this is just the beginning of that process. And I really appreciate Ms. Brooks for that. Ms. Allegra, I would definitely love for you to work with us again on some of this. I'll put Ms. Brooks in charge of that. And
I'd be happy to. Thank you.
Yes, yes. Okay, Ms. Brooks, close us out.
All right. Well, I want to thank everybody for joining the panel first and foremost. You know, thank our ancestors for, you know, being a part of this conversation, and also thank, you know, everybody who called in to share, you know, their viewpoints, even if we didn't agree on the subject. You know, it doesn't matter. We're talking about something that is detrimental to, you know, our people, to the growth and development of us. You know, we definitely need to keep these conversations going on to come up with some collective solutions to fix these issues. And whether we're thinking about it a new age way or a old age way, it doesn't matter. We're thinking about the situation. I also want to thank Dr. Rogers for giving us the platform, you know, to have this conversation and, you know, to bring up this topic. And I appreciate everybody who was a part of this discussion.
Okay. I've got my brother on from Philadelphia. He's on here now. He was on before. Brother, I had to silence you before because there's a lot of static in your phone. Did you want to say some things? I know you stayed on for a while. You had a
Dr. Rogers, I sure did. One of my comrades was unfortunately in the hospital, and I went from the hospital to a vehicle, and you're right. And okay. I'm happy that you didn't bring me on. And Dr. Rogers, we always have good conversations. You always invite people to come, and I like all that everybody said. And you know what? I learned so much just listening. This time I didn't do so much talking, and this is great.
Right,
because I learned more sometimes listening than talking.
Yep.
And I guess another time we'll have another go-round where I'll be able to contribute. But now I know more now than what I did before. So the next time all of us get together, I will make my contribution.
Well, we are. We are going to get together again. We're going to talk where young folk and older people can talk and can share some of these ideas about things that plague our community. And we want to try to provide some kind of vision and support for each other in that way, and how can we help them, and how can they help us, and, you know, move this thing forward. So definitely.
I'll tell you this, though, Dr. Rogers. These conversations are very necessary because there's going to be another Kanye West.
Right.
There's going to be another Donald Trump.
It sure is.
There's going to be another revolutionary to come along to bust it all up and make it better again.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to go in circles. And so we need these conversations
so we can shorten the length of this evil on the planet. Mm-hmm. That's the whole idea, is destroying the negative and building the positive. And for the next mm-hmm. generation, I like what I hear from the younger people. I'm not mm-hmm. so old myself, but I like what I hear from the future. See, that's the future. And I'm going to contribute, and I'm learning from them. Listen, as an educator, I learn so much from my students. I really do. Right. I mean, you know, they keep me so progressive. Some of the stuff they do and say I dislike, but some of the stuff that they say and do, I like.
Right.
And I know that one day when I'm not around, they're going to be around.
Right. Exactly.
And they're going to have to carry this, and they carry the torch, and they're going to have to pass it on to somebody else.
That's great.
Younger than them.
That's great.
So we need these conversations. We need to be around in the future. We need to be able to destroy the negative in order to build the positive. And I learned so much from Mr. Pugh and these ladies that I heard and listening to you. And listen, this program that you have has been so beneficial to me and with so much enrichment.
Well, thank you,
man. I'm ready to take it on, man. I'm ready to go into the future and destroy the negative and build on the positive.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I want to make a quick comment. I think it's important that at the end of each one of these shows, that we look at what we have in common, because I'm not interested in arguing with any youth or anybody for that matter.
Right.
What I'm hearing, though, is we are really saying the same things.
Okay.
Okay. There's a generational battle that was created by Eurocentric sickness, as Mark Starby talked about it. But we really are on the same page. That's why I said we have been fighting. We have been doing the same things that we're talking about. We just need to learn from the past. Heal. I want to say heal emotionally and psychologically from the past, so we can do something from the past, rather, so we can do something different, but do it together, not as an opposing generational issue, because that is not even who we are as African people.
Right.
Beautiful.
We don't. The generational divide is not even who we are. Mm-hmm. I love my young people,
right,
but I want to make sure that they know all there is to know. That's possible.
All right. I want to thank Brother Elliot. I want to thank Brother Elliot for letting us go over time. We have now gone about 2 minutes over our closing time. You can listen to this broadcast by going to www.timeforanawakening.com. Probably by Friday, our engineer, Mr. Brother Kwaku out of Atlanta, is going to put this up on the website sometime tomorrow, and it will be available for any of you who want to go back and review what we've said and obviously pull from there. Ms. Brooks, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And all of you that have called in and listened, have a wonderful and blessed week. We look forward to talking with you again. Thank you, and may God bless you all.
Amen.
Black is you, black is me, black is us, black is free. Black is me, black is me, black is us, black is free. Black is us, black is me, black is us, black is free. Black is free, black is me, black is us, black is free. Black is you, black is me. Black is me, black is me, black is us, black is free, black is us.